Chapter 3. Are we passive observers or powerful creators? Speaking quantum. In 1854, Chief Seattle warned American legislators how the destruction of North America's wilderness had implications that would reach far beyond their time and even threaten the survival of future generations. Through profound wisdom that's as true today as it was then, the chief simply stated that man did not weave the web of life. He is merely a strand in it. Whatever he does to the web, he does to himself. The parallel between Chief Seattle's description of our place in the web of life and our connection with and within the divine matrix is unmistakable. As part of all that we see, we are participants in this ongoing conversation, a quantum dialogue with ourselves, our world, and even beyond. Within this cosmic conversation, our feelings, emotions, our prayers, and beliefs in each moment of every day represent us speaking to the universe, and every day, from the vitality of our bodies to the peace of our world, the universe is speaking back. As mentioned earlier, physicist John Wheeler suggests that we play not only a role, but we also play the prime role in what he calls a participatory universe. The key to Wheeler's statement is the word participatory. In a participatory universe, you and I are part of the equation. We're both catalysts for the events in our lives as well as the experiencers of what we create. Both are happening precisely the same time. Wheeler says that we're part of a universe. It's a work in progress. In this unfinished creation, he says that we're tiny patches of the universe looking at itself and building itself. So Wheeler's statement opens the door to a radical possibility. And that possibility is simply this. If consciousness creates, then the universe itself may be the result of consciousness. While Wheeler's views were proposed late in the 20th century, we can't help but think back to Max Planck's statement that matter exists because of what he called an intelligent mind, the matrix of all matter. So now the question that begs to be asked here is simply this: what mind? In a participatory universe, the act of focusing our consciousness, of us looking somewhere and examining our world, is an act of creation in and of itself. We are the ones looking. We're the ones who are examining our world. We are the mind, or at least part of a greater mind, as Planck described. Everywhere we look, our consciousness makes something for us to look at, and this is our fifth key in the understanding of the divine matrix. Key number 5 simply states that the act of focusing awareness is an act of creation. Consciousness creates. From our search to find the smallest particle of matter to our quest to define the edge of the universe, this relationship suggests that we may never find either. Because no matter how deeply we peer into the quantum world of the atom, or how far we reach into the vastness of outer space, it's the act of us looking with the exception that something exists that may be precisely the act that creates something for us to see. A participatory universe. Exactly what does that mean? If consciousness really creates, then how much power do we really have to change our world? Well, the answer might surprise you. The 20th century visionary from Barbados, simply known by the name Neville, perhaps best described our ability to make our dreams a reality and bring imagination to life in terms that are simple yet direct. Through his books and lectures, he shared the following great secret of how to navigate the many possibilities of our divine matrix. Because from Neville's perspective, all that we experience, literally, everything that happens to us or is done by us, is the product of consciousness and absolutely nothing else. He believed that our ability to bring this understanding through the power of imagination is all that stands between us and the miracles of our lives. Just as the divine matrix provides the container for the entire universe, Neville suggested that it's impossible for anything to happen outside of this container. How easy it is to think otherwise. Immediately after the terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001, for example, in New York and Washington, D.C., the question everyone was asking was why? Why did they do this to us? What did we do to them? Well, we live in a time in history when it's so easy to think of the world in terms of them and us, and to ask how bad things can happen to good people. If there is, in fact, a single field of energy that connects everything in our world, and if the divine matrix works the way the evidence suggests, then there can be no them and us. There's only a we, and we are all that is. From the leaders of countries that we've learned to fear and hate to the people of countries that touch our hearts and invite our love, we're all connected. In what may be the most intimate way imaginable, we're connected in the field of consciousness that's the incubator for nothing less than our reality. Together, we create the healing or the suffering. Together, we create the war or the peace. This may just be the most difficult implication of what the new science is showing us. It may also be the source of our greatest healing and even our survival. Neville's work reminds us that perhaps the greatest error in our worldview is to look to external reasons for life's ups and downs. While there are certainly causes and effects that may lead to the events of every day, they seem to originate from a time and a place that appears completely disconnected with the moment. In a single sentence, Neville shares the crux of the greatest mystery regarding our relationship to the world around us. Man's chief delusion, he says, is his conviction that there are causes other than his own state of consciousness. So just what does this mean? This is the practical question that naturally arises when we talk about living in a participatory universe. When we ask the question of how much power we really have to bring about change in our lives, the answer is simple, and it's summarized as the next key number 6 in understanding the divine matrix. And the key simply states that we have all the power we need to create all of the change that we choose. And it's available to us through the way we use the power of our awareness and where we choose to place our focus. In his book entitled The Power of Awareness, Neville offers example after example of case histories that very clearly illustrate precisely how this power works. And one of the most poignant has remained with me for years. It's the story of a man in his 20s who'd been diagnosed with a rare heart condition his doctors believed would be fatal. He was married, he had 2 small children, he had every reason in the world to live. Those who knew him and loved him also knew that he had every reason in the world to live a long and healthy life. And by the time Neville was asked to speak with this man, he'd lost a tremendous amount of weight and he had shrunk to what Neville called almost a skeleton. The man was so weak that even conversation was hard for him. He agreed to simply listen to Neville and nod his head in understanding as Neville shared with him the power of his beliefs. From the perspective of us participating in a dynamic and evolving universe, there can be only one solution to any problem. That solution is a change in attitude and a change in consciousness. Well, with this idea in mind, Neville asked the man to experience himself as if his healing had already taken place. As the poet William Blake suggests, there's a very fine line between imagination and reality. Man is all imagination, Blake reminds us, and just as physicist David Bohm suggests that this world is a projection of events in a deeper realm of reality, Blake continues, stating that all you behold, though it appears without, it is within. In your imagination, of which this world of mortality is but a shadow. Well, through the power of consciously focusing upon the things that we create in our imagination, we give them the nudge, the quantum nudge, that brings them through the barrier between the unreal and the real. So with these ideas in mind, in a single sentence, Neville offered the words that would help the young man accomplish this new way of thinking. Neville began by simply stating that he suggested in the man's imagination that he see the doctor's face expressing incredulous amazement in finding him already recovered, contrary to all reason, from the last stages of an incurable disease. Neville went on to suggest that when the doctor came in, that the man see him double-checking his examination and hear him saying over and over, "It's a miracle, it's a miracle." Well, you can imagine the reason I'm sharing this story the way I am. The man did recover. Months later, Neville received a letter that he had, in fact, made a truly miraculous recovery, and he later met with the man and his family and found him enjoying life and perfect health. The secret, the man revealed, to his recovery was that from the day of their meeting, rather than simply thinking or wishing for his health or for his healing, The man had lived from what he called the assumption of already being well and healed. And herein, we find the subtle secret of propelling our heart's desires from the state of imagination in our dreams to the reality of our everyday lives. The secret is in our ability to feel as if our dreams have already come to life, to feel as if our desires are already fulfilled and our prayers are already answered. In this way, we actively share in what Wheeler called our participatory universe.